This is Will's Band of the Week for May 22nd, 2022. Welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Craig from the Ipswich Bureau.
Here I am.
Hasn't been too long. You've been pretty regular here.
The South by Southwest report was my last time, I think.
All right. Well, can never have too much Ipswich Bureau on the podcast.
I'm back for the female vocalist special today.
I didn't even think about that. Do we have that?
We do. Where's Chris?
He should be here for that.
When he hears he's missed this episode.
Right. And that's not all. I mean, there are more female vocalists upcoming. So, yeah. Well, it's going to be another good one, of course. I actually had fun coming up with my bonus song of the week, too. So people should look forward to that. I just set a high standard for myself.
The reason I haven't been here since that South by Southwest report is I've barely been in the house, mostly on the road watching the bands and back to live music here in the UK, and the live reports are flowing.
That's great. Well, I don't know if they're... I guess I was going to mention to the listeners that we're recording this. Our schedule's a little bit strange, so we're recording this a week before it goes up. So if anything exciting happened in the indie rock world that we're not discussing, it's probably because of that. So just wanted to make sure. Yeah. People expect up-to-the-minute indie rock news from us, you know, and so anyway, that's the explanation.
It's not because we're not aware of this incident having taken place. We'd obviously know, and we would cover it.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever incident did happen, we know about it, but we were recording before it happened. All right, I think it's time. Well, I had a recent live report, and I provided that with Anurag on a recently recorded podcast. So now we have to leave it to Craig. But, you know, if you need a live report, if you need multiple live reports, you turn to Craig and he responds.
Things have got a little bit out of control here. The lockdown wasn't good, and then for live music and for many other reasons around the world. Now things are back. We thought, well, we better make up for lost time.
It seems like you're doing that pretty well.
I'm not even going to give a report on everything. I had to cut the list down to only four.
They have to be podcast-worthy live reports.
Yes, and something a little bit different. If I talked about band again and again and again, I don't think we need to bring that back. So I think people will know, regular listeners will know what I'm referring to. So we'll admit that on this occasion when we talk about something different. This is roughly chronological then. Here we go. About 3 weeks ago, we went to see Florist, who your listeners will know, hopefully. Well, it wasn't quite Florist. It was Emily Sprague, solo, the main protagonist of that band. And we've been longtime fans here.
Yep.
On the podcast. And I even said, well, maybe this is kind of jumping ahead of the live report, really. But after the show, I think I put on our production WhatsApp channel there, I said, this is my favorite songwriter of the century so far. The century is quite young, but I won't live for all of it. So I think it's fine to make those kind of statements.
That's still pretty bold.
Well, there are a lot of other songwriters, but sometimes you just connect with these things. We all have our favorites. And for me, she's just a way of observing the world. Very, very kind of in tune with the natural world, I think. She was chatting between the songs about how she likes water And she used to surf when she was living in California, and she's come back to the East Coast of US now, where she originated, I think. Come back more to where she's from, and now she has a kayak, and she goes out. But kayaking is very different. Well, unless you're doing white water kayaking, I guess she said how kayaking doesn't really give you the buzz of surfing. It's much more safe and gentle. So that was a different vibe for her. But anyway, very much in the natural world. And yeah, her songs just tend to be stories about her life and nature and things. So yeah, connects with me.
And they have a full band album coming out soon, right?
And I think it's a double album.
Wow.
The culmination that they presented on Instagram as this is the culmination of their time together. This will be their third, and she's done a solo one and amongst all that, which still was under the name Florist, but it was just her.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited to hear like that one from the first one that I heard that had a sort of a full band sound. I really loved, and I really like her songwriting too. But I think the dynamics that the full band adds it's really worthwhile.
Yes, I would agree. I prefer to see them as a band, but whenever she comes to London, I think we've seen her 3 times now in London, once with one or two other band members and twice solo. So this was just her, and the venue was absolutely superb. And Emily really liked it because it was lots of wood. She said it's nice to be here in this wooden auditorium.
Oh, that's cool.
The floor was oak. And all up and down the sides, and maybe even the roof. I'm going to stop short of the roof, but definitely the sides were wooden panels. So, and she just her, no supporting act, a chair, acoustic guitar on the stage, and then she started playing a lot of stuff off the newer album, which is yet to be released, and worked backwards chronologically, and a couple of older ones towards the end, by about an hour. Very, very nice indeed.
Great.
It's nice to seated shows are where it's at for me now. You know, we're in the front row, nice comfortable seat, 1 hour, perfect. And then get finished at 9. Actually played from 8 till 9, and then off we went about the rest of the evening. Perfect in every way.
Well, that's the same concept when we went to see Fontaines D.C. and I reported on it on last week's podcast. But my sister said she didn't want to go because she only wants to go to shows where she can sit down. This place had basically, you probably could have found a place to sit down, but it was very limited. So,
yeah. I mean, absolutely no disrespect to your sister at all. I would say the most friendly way. I know she'll be older than I am, but I'm already at the same place she's arrived at. Yeah. I prefer to sit if I can.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice.
Okay. Then the next one after that, what's this? Ah, yes. Well, we went to Brussels, which is in Belgium, as people will be aware. You can get the train there from London, so that's pretty cool. And it's probably quicker to get, once you're in London, which Ipswich is not, obviously, but once we're there, it's quicker to get to Brussels than it is to Manchester, for example. It's
quite amazing. Wow. I had no idea.
Well, about the same, I guess, but okay, 2 hours and you'd be in Manchester or Brussels. So it's pretty cool. And we were supposed to be seeing Belle and Sebastian, but they postponed. Yet to be rearranged, but we filled in with a show which was Mitski on her European tour. That's just amazing, supported by Sasami.
Oh, wow.
And where do I begin? Is it a place called the Botanique, which is the botanical garden and sort of indoor outdoor botanical garden thing in the center of Brussels? Really cool venues, a suite of venues, 2 or 3 indoor theatres, and then outside they have this spring festival, Les Nuits Botaniques, the Botanique Nights, and they have a marquee out in the gardens for this festival. So they have four shows a night for basically 4 or 5 or 6 weeks, 2 months in the spring. So it's all part of that. We were on the tram coming back to our accommodation, sort of late afternoon, maybe 4 o'clock. Thinking, okay, we'll go back to the accommodation, quickly change, get freshened up and come back out for the show. We went past the Botanique on the tram, and there was people in goth clothing, what I would describe, you know, black clothing, baggy jeans, torn, and eye makeup, lots of black.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought, well, that isn't for Mitski. Well, it could be for Sasami, but she's only the opener, and it's like 4 hours before the show, so no, it can't be that. So we went back, came back again about 3.5 hours later with our tickets. The queue was absolutely enormous. Still winding down the street. You know, these queues that are 2 people wide look like they're much long. You know, there's probably only about 300 people there, but it looked like thousands because it was so long. And we thought, oh, God, what's going on here? They still haven't let people in. We're not going to get in time. And what are they here for? So we watched, observed. The doors opened. These teenagers in their gothic clothing were running to the marquee where the Sasami and Mitski show was going to be taking place. I thought it was absolutely ridiculous to Amanda because I told her firmly these were not fans of the show we were going to.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because we've talked about Sasami before. She really, really great songwriter, a really great voice, but she's gone in this strange metal direction. And this must be... let's just say she's very popular with screaming teenagers in Belgium.
Wow.
Wow. Amazing. So part of the fun of this show was... the musical direction Sasami's gone in is not for me. But part of the fun of being there was... I don't think I've been to something in many years where the average excitement of the crowd was so high. People were just so excited to see both of these artists. We thought they were there for Sasami, but they stayed and maintained their enthusiasm when Mitski came on as well. And so that was just so fun to be there with all this enthusiasm.
Yeah, wow. That's cool.
Mitski was good. Lots of stage theatrics, which I hadn't necessarily expected, you know, almost like yoga on stage or something. Yeah. Lots of dancing and prancing around.
Yeah, Baird and I saw her a couple of years ago and maybe 3 years ago now. And that was, I mean, it was a total performance art, you know?
Yeah, indeed, yeah. Lots of short songs, which is kind of good because the cliche is if you don't like this song, don't worry, there'll be another one. But I did like most of them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognized some from 2 or 3 albums ago. So, and then some newer stuff too. So, yeah, good range.
So, this is one of the fun things about doing this podcast. When sometimes, usually it's where bands are from, and I'm looking up the geography. But now I'm fascinated with this London to Brussels trip here. I just looked it up. So, it takes 2 hours by train. If you drive, it takes 5 hours. And I'm looking at the map, and this is probably, you're going to think this is completely naive, but I'm just fascinated at the concept that there must be a tunnel under the English Channel where the train goes.
That's right. I think it was opened in 1996. Oh, someone's going to write in. But it was the 90s anyway, something like that. I could look it up, obviously.
And it looks pretty far. Like, what would that distance be?
30 miles.
Okay.
It goes at the shortest point.
I mean, that is just... that train must be a pretty high-speed train.
Yeah, I think it goes. They do it in kilometers, around 180 miles an hour top speed. I think it can get to 200, wow. But not on a regular run.
Oh, that's just so cool. So cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of fanfare, obviously, when it opened. And so there's two. You can, if you prefer to take your car with you to the continent, which some people just, you know, much prefer that, you can drive your car onto the train, not the same train that we went on. There's two.
Mm-hmm.
And then the train takes your car to France, and then you can drive off the other side, or you can get the train from central London as a foot passenger, and then obviously you proceed on foot when you arrive at your destination.
And so you, and I can see this now because you're coming onto the across the channel, and you're in northern France, and then it's not too far to Belgium from there.
That's right. Yeah.
And then I can imagine there are high-speed trains everywhere around there, like if you wanted to go to Berlin or something.
Yeah, from London they have them to Paris, the south of France, and Brussels, and Amsterdam in the Netherlands. And then from Amsterdam or Brussels you can change to high-speed, yeah, into Germany.
Wow. Cool stuff. That's fun.
There we are. Will's transport update of the week.
Right. Yep.
And then we're back in London now. This is last weekend, so we're almost up to date. Two more live reports on consecutive nights. There's a good young band we like, British Sea Power's brother and former manager, older brother of the two of the members, is championing this band from where he lives in the southwest of England called Pale Blue Eyes. Good band, good young kids. Sort of elements of Galaxy 500. Stuff like that, a bit of krautrock influence as well. So we're going to see them opening up for the Besnard Lakes, who are the Canadian epic indie anthem band.
Yeah, it seems like they've been around forever. Yeah.
And so we decided we would stay, and Pale Blue Eyes were good. I think they're raw still. They've got about, you know, when bands are just starting out and they've got three good songs and not quite enough to play half an hour yet. But, you know, very, very promising. And then Vested Lakes played for about, they came on and they said, we're just going to play until we get kicked off. The curfew's this time. No encore. We're just going to play. And then they did that. I think about an hour and 45 maybe. Amanda and I said to each other, well, we're not fans. If we don't like it, we'll just leave at any time. Feel free to tell the other person you're ready to go. But we stayed till the end, so no one used the option of getting out.
They held you to the end. That's good.
Yeah, he has a very catchy voice, falsetto, which is always impressive whenever he brings that out in the songs. And yeah, lots of long songs. I think I reported back on the WhatsApp channel again, elements of Built to Spill and British Sea Power in there. So things that I like in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, cool. And they're veterans, so I suppose they're a pretty tight live band.
Yeah, there was something funny. Again, I mean no harm by this. The singer and, now what was she, the bass player or the guitarist? Anyway, the husband and wife are the two main protagonists in the band. And at one point she said, I've been married to this guy for 20 years. And without her saying it, even if you didn't know anything about the band, you would just know. Because they just looked like they were going to be... They had the kind of charisma which you can just detect, and they just looked like they would be a couple. So it was quite funny.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then the next day we went to see Mateel at a cool new venue in London, very close to the one where we saw Florist, actually. I say cool venue. It's managed or owned, probably both, by Mumford & Sons, which is not a good band.
Mm-hmm.
But they obviously know what they're doing because they opened up this place where... two or three different places to get food when you go in. You order on the app and it's delivered to your table, so very, very efficient. And then you go into the venue, very nice, wide and shallow venue, so but pretty much anyone will be able to see. Opposite of the worst kind of venue where it's long and narrow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so very cool place. And Mateel, well, I tried to listen to her 2 or 3 years ago when we were going to South by Southwest, because I think she was there, 2019. I just couldn't get into it. But she's come out with this new album, which is very poppy. Slight change of direction, really accessible. And so that got us interested enough to go. Yeah, and she was good.
Cool. There must be so many venues in London. So it's like, there's probably 20 of them there that you've been to, right? And the new one's open. So it's always exciting.
You kind of think... what's the point of opening a new one? Because there's already so many. But yeah, places go through a fashion. I guess the promoter might change, or you're talking to the promoter and they have 5 or 6 things coming up and you end up booking them all if you're working for a venue. But sometimes you go to one venue 5 times a year and then not at all the next year. It's just how these things go.
Around here, it seems like the newer venues are being opened by promoters who are like building a building, you know, specifically for their own promotion, and that usually comes with higher ticket prices too, but it's the way it goes, I guess. The days of the $10 show with 4 indie rock bands, you know, that's ridiculous anyway, right? That's not enough money to sustain anybody or anything, really, so some increase is reasonable.
Yeah, I have noticed a bit of ticket price inflation. When I say notice, I wouldn't complain about it, I've just observed it. Yeah, I think £15 to £20 is pretty normal now, even for those smaller kind of things.
Yep. Same around here too. Well, great. Okay, those were some pretty impressive live reports. Again, we'll keep them coming. Hopefully, I think seems like the various podcasters are. You will always be the lead live report guy, but we've got other people out there in the. In the music world.
Yeah, Jeremiah is trying to take my crown.
I know. He's like, he's some festival he's going to go to just this weekend or something. So, yeah, exciting stuff. All right, cool. Well, we have a lot of music to talk about. It's good, of course, because it's always good. How do we describe our relationship with Wet Leg? Like, we were kind of onto them at the start when they started getting press after they had 3 songs out, right? And then they sort of blew up with just 3 songs. So, it's the strangest thing.
It's fun to observe it. And the interesting thing is they're so massive, but they still have, they still appeal to the indie crowd and the aging rockers.
Right. And so it's an interesting combination of things. And I was thinking about, well, how could they have gotten so big so quickly? And I think part of it is there's a lot of humor in their music, you know, in their lyrics. And so they're kind of goofy, but they also have, you know, the hooks. And I guess it's just a really good combination of things that that made them hit indie rock stardom very quickly. You know, I keep thinking they're going to be on Saturday Night Live or something. They're getting so big.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised at all next time they come to the US.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't have a US number one album. The album went to number one in Australia and the UK, I saw. I forget the US placing, but not maybe number four, something like that. Anyway, interesting. I thought they were pretty big there too, but the dynamics of the charting could be a little different in the US.
Yeah, I don't think they're as big here. I don't think they'd be playing arena rock quite yet, but yeah, it's a pretty quick rise to indie rock stardom. So, well, when we were talking about South by Southwest, and I think you already played the hit, right? Chaise Longue.
Yeah, which has 18.6 million plays on Spotify.
Oh my god. Wow.
And I think that would probably be add up a lot of all back catalogue by many of the artists we talk about, and they wouldn't come to above 1 million plays in total for all of their songs, never mind 18.6 million.
Right. Yeah.
That's crazy. And that's I don't know how much, there's all these stories going around about how much the artists make. Is it something like 1p or 1 cent per play or something?
I think it's not that much. It's less than that.
Okay. But even less than that, okay.
But it might
Even then, let's say it's 1 cent per 5 plays.
Yeah.
Wet Leg is actually making some money off the streaming services, which is interesting to observe on its own.
Yeah, yeah. That if we really did our music journalism, we would have that calculation. How much money do they get for the 18.6 million? But is that just Spotify only, or is that when they combine all the streaming services? Because you could
Spotify
add
Spotify only. This is
yeah, because you add Apple and Amazon and YouTube Music, right? Google Play Music, I think, is now just YouTube Music, if I read that properly. I'm not even positive about that, but I think
they're owned by the site. Doesn't Google own YouTube? Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
But I wouldn't think that, I don't think Spotify would be like more than half. Well, they might be half. So maybe they've got 36 million plays. Anyway, so the album is out. It's been out maybe for a month now, and we're finally getting around to discussing it. What do you think?
What do I think? I think the hype is somewhat justified.
It's a pretty solid album, isn't it? Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I think Chaise Longue may be my favorite track. Obviously, I'm not going to pick it again, but it's good. Yeah, and I think we bought tickets to go and see them, despite the fact. Yes, it's kind of what I'm reaching for here is there's all this hype, and it'd be easy for the cool indie kids to say, oh, well, never mind. They've risen too quickly. We're not interested in that because they're too popular. But it's good enough that I would maintain an interest in them.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. So, well, what are we going to play first?
Well, I think I'll have one of these ones with the explicit lyrics tag. That's most of the album. I think there's only two that don't have it, or three. I was going to go for track. As I said, I'm avoiding the obvious things here. Going for one with only 1 million plays. Track 7, Loving You.
Thank you.
That's Wet Leg from their self-titled debut Sensation album. So that's one where if you had only heard the advanced tracks, it's sort of a dimension you wouldn't know they were going to have, right? That's why it was kind of fun listening to this album, because the well, it was like all the other albums we talk about. This one, I think I listened to the advanced tracks a little more than I usually do, just because they had all this hype and it was like, but they're pretty good, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, they're good songwriters, right? There's just a lot of good songs, not just the goofy and punchy and fun stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking in trying to pick that one out. I think if that was, you wouldn't know this is a band that's getting 18 million plays a song. Not for this specific song. I said that was 1 million, but still, yeah, that could, I guess, Snail Mail and Always are kind of similar, and they're also really popular. So, but that's, you wouldn't, you know, it just sounds like an indie band that we would typically feature on the podcast. You wouldn't know they're smashing all these huge numbers.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, I've got a pick. The guitar sound on this song is just really cool. I don't know how they did it. So let's listen to that. Number 3, Angelica. Angelica. That's Wet Leg, justifying the hype.
Somewhat. So this is Rian Teasdale and Hester Chambers from the Isle of Wight. Now, I want to talk, well, I wanted to mention the Isle of Wight because this is one of the best parts of the United Kingdom. Very cool place to come from. It's close to where I was born, where I'm from, and a family connection. My grandparents moved there about 15 years ago. And my grandmother still lives there, although she's actually leaving, but not because of Wet Leg.
Not because of Wet Leg.
Independent.
Was it because of the crowds from the Isle of Wight Festival? I've heard of that festival.
Yeah, they call come the ferry comes in at the end of the road where she lives. And the festival's famous because Jimi Hendrix played there in the 60s. But they brought it back about 15 years ago or something. Yeah, they're all come piling off the ferry at the end of the road where she lives. But it's a big tourist place all summer anyway, so I don't think the festival crowd is that much more mad than it is throughout July and August.
So I just did my geography check again. I didn't have this in my mind in the place where it actually is, just straight south of Southampton. I was thinking it was more west, but that's just in my head. So
yeah, that's right. So you can get the ferry from Southampton in 1 hour, or there's a fast catamaran, it takes 20 minutes, or from Portsmouth, there's a ferry, or a fast catamaran as well. And there's also another ferry further along from Lymington to Yarmouth. So ferries, catamarans, hovercraft.
Wow.
Oh, the only passenger hovercraft service in the world. So it's pretty
cool. That is really cool. It looks like there aren't really many big cities at all. There's Newport. Looks like it's basically the main city, right?
Yeah, I've never heard of... That's right. Newport is the largest settlement. The band Ash from Ireland did a tour of the UK, oh dear, several years ago, where they did an A to Z tour, A to Z, if you mm-hmm. prefer. And so they would have played in Aberdeen on the A and Bath on the B, etc. And they played in Ventnor on the Isle of Wight for the V. I've never heard of any other show, apart from the festival, happening on the island. So surely Wet Leg has got to do a homecoming show in Newport.
Yeah, you'd think so. Do they have an arena big enough for the arena rock that they'll need?
They'd have to be outside. There's lots of fields.
A lot of fields. There's got to be a football stadium, right?
Yeah, the Speedway, actually.
Is there a what's the highest level football team on the Isle of Wight?
Oh, amateur.
So very, there's very nothing
low. Like 12th division of the league or something.
So probably. There's not
a bit higher than that.
Not even a League One, huh?
Oh no, nowhere near. Portsmouth is in League One.
All right.
Cool. So I mentioned the two female band members. Do you know this band called Sleeper? They were 1990s British band.
Does not sound familiar.
There was a famous thing. They were a Britpop band, and it was notable. They had Louise, how do you say her name? Vina? I know, it was the main woman. And then they had three men in the band on guitar, bass, and drums. And they were called Sleeper Blokes, because you would... No one who was going to see the band was paying any attention to the male musicians whatsoever. They're just going to see her on the guitar and vocals. Wet Leg remind me of this a little bit. They were called them the Wet Leg Blokes.
Yeah.
You mentioned the guitar sound, and it's good, actually, and I agree. That was also one of my picks, that song, Angelica. But really, people are really, when they go to see Wet Leg, or they're going to see the two women.
Yeah,
songwriters.
Probably.
Anyway, just a little novelty.
Yep. Well, one more track. What's it going to be?
I'm going to pick Shay's Little... No, I'm just kidding. Oh, we're not going to have that again. Well, I had two remaining. Let's just go for one of them. With the least... I'm going to go for the one with the least plays. It's pushing 1,964,000.
Okay, this means it's a deep cut, right?
Yeah. Track 10. Piece of shit. Excuse the explicit.
Didn't get up till the afternoon. Our plans fell through, and now you're calling me out. Guess I should have set the alarm a little earlier, 'cause now you call me up. Alright, I'm not enough. Alright, I fucked it up. Alright, I'm such a slut.
That's Wet Leg. I think we played some, you know, kind of deep cuts, and, you know, the album is just full of catchy hooks and funny stuff and goofy stuff and everything. It's really, really solid. 12 songs, 37 minutes.
Yeah, good. I always think, I don't know what, I just remember this, whenever there's the explicit lyrics warning, I think it's just because when those stickers were first invented, or at least in my experience, I just always think of this should be on like Slipknot or Limp Bizkit or something. This is funny to think of this twee indie band from the Isle of Wight.
They have to have the
sticker absolutely plastered on this thing.
It's ridiculous.
It's always how times have changed. Generally, I know there's some fundamental religious people who would disagree with the relaxing of morals in the world, but generally these things are getting a little bit looser with time, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. When I upload the podcast, I think there's an option that you can mark it as explicit. I never do. So we could get into huge trouble for not warning people, you know, by putting a great big E, block E on it. All right. I think we did it justice. Solid album, fun band. If you can see them in a non-arena context, try to do that. You were able to do that at South by Southwest. They were just slightly too popular for me to be able to see. But yeah, I figure even if they come to Madison, they'll probably play at the Sylvie, the 2,000-seat venue. But who knows? I imagine I'll eventually get to see them. I think it'd be worthwhile.
Yeah, I'd recommend it.
All right, on to the next band. Well, let's see. I think let's go with Aldous Harding. And you've told us about Aldous Harding before, and we talked about her. This is the second album, right?
This is the fourth album.
Oh, God, it's the second one that I knew about. Because I only knew about I guess it must have been the most recent one. And then I remember you saw her live and said how great it was.
Yeah, that's right. So the previous album was 2019, Designer, and that was in my top 10 of the year, third place. And so I was hotly anticipating this one, and I think it was, well, her producer is British, and I think COVID may have delayed things slightly. It's hard to tell. She had a tour and the dates were postponed, but that was hardly unusual. Everyone was doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But the album finally emerged in spring this year. About, again, similar to the Wet Leg one, 3 or 4 weeks ago, something like that.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, the fourth one. She's from New Zealand, but when she tours, she tours with Welsh musicians. Maybe that's not exclusively, but certainly some of them. Let's say British musicians, just to be careful. She's a British producer. So she has this kind of vague connection to Wales and Britain as well. It's interesting.
It's not like they're close by either. I mean, New Zealand.
It's as far away as you can get. Pretty much 12,000 miles, I think.
Yeah. It's not a convenient weekend trip.
No. This album is called Warm Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have a friend and colleague called Chris. So interesting.
Yeah, well, why don't you pick the first track?
Yeah, let's do that, and then we'll talk some more about it afterwards. I was going to go with track 3, Fever.
We did what the other expected.
they caught and we forget. One will fight, the other's connected.
Aldous Harding. So I'm glad you nominated this, because the first time I listened to it, it must just be like such a change of pace from what I normally listen to. It was so quiet and I just couldn't really connect with it. It took more listening to sort of absorb it. There was one review I was reading that said you have to learn how to listen to this album. So
I definitely agree with that. It's so subtle. People tend to pick up on how much silence and space there is in the songs, but then she hits you with these catchy choruses, and you're right, you don't really know, it's not obvious. The lyrics are kind of enigmatic, and the music is just kind of quiet and slow. It's, you have to learn how to listen to it. I couldn't put it better than that.
That was, actually, I found it was a Pitchfork review, and that little statement there was like the only part of the review that I related to. The rest was all these intellectual references to literature and stuff. It's like, sorry.
Pretentious literature.
So yeah, over my head. Sorry.
The other thing about her is she has these, well, we're going to have to find an example of this now, I'm going to say, a range of vocal expressions and effects. So in that one, she's kind of androgynous in a way, quite deep. For female vocals, and other times she'll just be making kind of childish noises, childish kind of pronunciations, I guess, and then sometimes they're very weird, kind of silly in a way. And it's just, yeah, kind of that variation. It's very interesting to listen to.
All right, I'm ready to make my pick. Let's see if my pick justifies your description. I'm going to go with number 6, Passion Babe. Aldous Harding. The album is Warm Chris. The vocal tone is a little different on that one.
Mm-hmm. Once you've had an artist on your top 10, I think to make it to a top 10, it shows that the artist connects with you, right? And they'd have to do something quite radical, maybe mm-hmm. like a Sasami kind of turn to not be something that you'd like when they release their later material.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I just like what she's up to.
that's going to be a reference now, like for years to come. We're talking about Sasami's metal phase, right? That's funny. All right. Well, back to you for another track.
Yeah, I mentioned her producer is John Parrish. He's British. And if anyone's wondering, well, who the heck's that? He did the Dry Cleaning album, the most recent Goonsax, and he's worked with PJ Harvey on many albums. So, yeah, he seems to work with female vocalists, which makes sense because that's what Aldous Harding is.
Yeah, and it's a really, it's a really good sounding album.
Yeah, you've got to make all those little bits and pieces. When you're going to have some, when it's so quiet, you've got to make the things stand out. So he obviously showing off his skills there.
Right, definitely.
Okay, yeah, you stole my pick there, which is good. We're still able to do that.
That's good. I'm proud of myself.
Let's go for 7. She'll Be Coming Round the Mountain.
When I started out, I had much more than I have now. Oh, the map, you'll see I have a long way back and not again. Living for the things I love, killing the ones that love me.
It's a sparse one, and I was about to say only piano and vocals, and then that sounds like a banjo going over the piano there.
Well, I thought it was a string instrument first, and then I think when it came back, I thought it was a brass of some kind, but I don't, a horn or a trumpet.
Oh. Well, it's, I guess, a sign of good production. You can't tell what the instrument is.
Is that a good sign? Okay, yeah, that's a new one. But I like that one because you can hear what she's singing. The lyrics still don't make any sense, but it's a kind of different... It's just the kind of thing that Michael Stipe had on those early albums where you couldn't... Not only could you not hear what he was singing, but if you could, you didn't make any sense.
Yeah, yeah. It's like on two levels of difficult to understand.
Right? Yeah. And then, well, I don't know if REM did this. I think so, but definitely Pulp, the band. They have the lyrics booklet in the CD, and it says, please do not... read the lyrics while listening to the music. I'm sure REM have that as well.
Yeah,
that's sticks in my mind.
That's interesting. Yeah. All right. Did we do Aldous Harding justice?
I hope so. Yeah. It's it's one of these things. You're going to have to go 3 or 4 times through the record. So if you didn't like what you've heard there, probably isn't an investment you're going to want to make. But if that's intrigued you enough, then get ready for some listening with the headphones on. It's not a kind of doing the dishes album. It's sitting with a cup of coffee or perhaps something stronger with the headphones on.
It's another thing that when, and you've seen her live show, so you know what they sound like. But I'm curious as to how this would come across live, which is, you know, a fun thing, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's going back several years now, 2019, with that really good show that I saw, but... She has the presence. You'd think, oh, this is so quiet. How can it possibly be? Because she plays in big venues. She's quite popular. two or 3,000. But yeah, it works. Yeah. She has the presence to carry it off for sure.
That's cool. Great. All right, we got another band. We got a third band. We're going to talk about Hader. And I looked. I knew that we had talked about Hader before, but this is the third album by Hader that we have talked about on the podcast. So that ought to be ready for an indie rock stardom by now, you'd think.
And their 2017 release was on my top 10.
Did you know that on October 1st, 2017, our podcast was you and me and Barrett talking about Always and Hader? So there you go. And then in 2018, late October, it looks like I put up a quick solo podcast and discussed another Hader album. So we're up to three Hader albums now. So and they've got on their Bandcamp, they quote this guy. Well, I assume it's the guy that Jeremiah knows because he does the Gorilla versus Bear blog. And on their Bandcamp, there's a quote. It says, "One of the best bands in the world, Gorilla versus Bear." See, when you get, it's kind of like you saying best songwriter of the century. You know, when the compliment is so spectacular, you have to highlight it. I think florists should put you on their Bandcamp now.
I wonder if I said Emery Sprague was my favorite rather than the best. I hope I did.
Yeah. Oh, maybe you did. Yeah.
Well, whatever I said, the listeners will. I mean, we can go back. If I said best, that was a mistake. It should always be favorite.
Yeah,
we don't
course.
Claim to be the only source of knowledge and wisdom.
Right. Yes. I totally agree with that.
2017. So, Hader, I went back and listened to some snippets of that 2017 release.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, it's so good. And so I did that after I listened to this one because I was thinking, how does that compare? It's good if you have time to go back and compare. But interesting. One of the best bands in the world.
I did not have time to do that. So you'll have to tell me if I'm right or wrong about this impression. I really like this album, but I think it's a little darker and not quite as poppy and catchy maybe as the last couple.
I'm only going to agree with you. I was going to say the same and ready for you to say, well, ho, what about this song and this song and this song? But no, yeah, that was my impression too.
But I definitely like it. I think it some of the good stuff is later in the album. I'll take the first one. Let's play, there are 9 tracks in 36 minutes. So let's play number 8, Renew Reject.
I'm
That's Hater. So it starts with this kind of dark verse and then just blossoms into this super catchy chorus. I think it's pretty great.
Yeah, that was my first pick also.
Oh, love to have stolen your pick. We're doing well with that game. I think, well, we should mention they're from Sweden, right? Malmo, which is a cool place to be from.
Yep, definitely. I think I talked about this in 2017. But I've been there.
Yep. You have been there?
Yep, we were on the Twilight Sad. Oh, gosh, it sounds like I'm name-dropping, but it's just... Okay, I won't say why I was there. Anyway, we were in Sweden and on tour watching a band. And, yeah, it was one of the nights off we had in a nice evening in Malmo.
Cool.
It's just the other side of... Oh, man, I should know. I'm a European. There's the bridge to Denmark, and it's between Copenhagen and Malmo. So Malmo's on one side of the bridge, and Copenhagen is the other. And I think the train... I'm pretty sure the train goes under the water and then the road goes above. I don't remember having these amazing views of the water when we crossed. So I think it goes under. But, yeah, actually very famous long European bridge.
Yep, I'm looking at the map right now. You have accurately described it.
Wow. There's a murder mystery series. Now, what is that called? I think it's called The Bridge, actually. Scandi Noir has taken the world by storm in the last few years on the streaming... The TV show streaming services, Netflix. And, yeah, it's called The Bridge. We watched the first series. Too scary for me to become a long-term fan of this program.
We seem to have that problem recently with a lot of TV series. A lot of them, they're really well-written and they're really interesting, but it seems like they feel like they have to have it be just totally gruesome in order to, you know... They have to have like limbs cut off and stuff. My wife's more sensitive to it than me, but I kind of agree with her on the concept. It's like, that's really not necessary. I mean, you can have good writing and interesting plot lines and stories. You don't really need to have serial killers all the time and people's limbs getting cut off. But just that's my editorial remark.
Now, I don't know if you've seen the... I know when I stayed with Barra and JJ, detective series, I don't know if... You, in your household, you've ever dabbled, but I'd recommend, in particular, Inspector Morse is a really good one from the late 80s and 90s. No gore, no limbs being cut off whatsoever. Hmm. One of the best. I said to Amanda yesterday, is Morse the best British TV show of all time? And she didn't come back with a retort. And I know, Jay, there's this thing called, what's it called? BritBox on the streaming services where you can get all the British shows. You have to, you know, you pay your... Few dollars per month or something, and then
yeah.
Anyway, that's a recommended one.
Hmm.
Yeah, my colleague, he loves Morse too, and whenever I recommend him a new one, he says, "But is it gruesome? Like one of the ones where they show you the cadavers in the morgue is Prime Suspect. They always like to show you how the crime was committed, you know, and this horrible dismembered corpse."
Yeah,
and I always say, no, don't worry, it's not Prime Suspect levels of gore.
So that. Yeah, we've been watching Line of Duty, which is kind of that, like, they have a lot of gruesome stuff in that series.
Yeah, I guess it's just because, I don't know, like we were saying earlier, these things, the swear words and violence is more acceptable to audiences now than it was 20 years ago, and so they feel like they have to include it, but sometimes we don't want to see that.
Yeah. Well, and the violence deserves more of a warning label in my mind than just the language, you know. It's like, come on. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Okay, let's get back to Hater. It's your pick now.
Oh, you stole mine. Oh yeah, that one you were saying how it was darker. Renew, Reject, the track that you picked, and mm-hmm. It starts out like a Twilight Sad song a little bit, and so it shows if there's one band that deals in the bleak mm-hmm. and the dark, then it's got to be them. So yeah, good observation. I was going to pick the immediately preceding track, 7, Summer Turns to Heartburn.
That's Hater. The new album is called Sincere. And you stole my second pick.
There we go.
Excellent
We're
job.
We're in tune today.
Yep.
Yeah. Bit of shoegaze. We haven't mentioned that, I don't think. Well, we may have mentioned it 3 years ago, or when, but not today. So worth mentioning that. The guitar shimmers, for sure.
Yep.
And her voice, well, I think that's got to be the best thing about it. I remember listening back to the album I liked before. Really, yeah, powerful, good vocal.
Yep. Cool band. I don't know if they've ever... I don't think they've ever toured in the United States. So, how about South by Southwest 23?
They did play at South by Southwest 2018.
Okay.
We were there in 19, weren't we? So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Missed them by a year. However, I like this so much. I'm just looking at the dates. They're playing in London on the 25th. And I'm going to make a commitment here to the listeners and to you, Will. I'm going to go.
All right. Cool.
So expect a live report. Oh, yeah. I like them so much. And I remember I wanted to see them before. I never have. So let's do it.
Yeah. All right. That's nice to hear that commitment. That's even without the studio upgrade and the travel budget that we've talked about behind the scenes. So you've committed already. That's good to see.
Well, I would have preferred them to play the Smokehouse, but sometimes you have to travel.
Anybody playing the Smokehouse these days?
Let's have a Smokehouse update.
Yeah.
See if the listeners have heard of any of these. Give me a second. I'm typing it in. Penelope Isles played last week. Don't know if anyone's heard of them. Didn't go. Now, I'm just scrolling through here. I don't think anyone's going to have heard of these people. Yeah, just scrolling.
Yeah,
Soccer
I'm looking
96. Heard of them? Getting a little bit of attention here in the UK. Jazz Festival. I saw this photo come up and I thought, that looks like a bunch of indie rockers from Brooklyn or Chicago. And then it says jazz, so I just quickly moved on. They do look like they could be in an indie rock band, though.
I see Kelly Stoltz is playing. He's a pretty good indie rocker.
Did we establish he's from Ipswich or something like that?
I don't know. I can't remember.
No, that's something else. Yeah, this is Echo and the Bunnymen. He must be from Liverpool.
He must have been in some weird incarnation of Echo and the Bunnymen. It says former guitarist for Echo and the Bunnymen. He must have just been like a touring guitarist for one tour or something. So you put that on your resume, I guess. But then he also covered the whole album, a whole Echo and the Bunnymen album. I think we talked about that at one point. Anyway, that's good. Well, they got a lot of gigs going on there, so that's cool. Looks like the Smokehouse is still going strong.
Yeah, they have this sister venue now called the Baths. The Baths, perhaps you'd... Old swimming baths, swimming pools, and gym, and now they've... Led Zeppelin played there. Not recently, in the 70s. I wasn't here then. And so it was closed down, then it was a gym and a swimming pool, and now it's reopened. So that's a slightly larger place, about 200 people.
Led Zeppelin and Ipswich. That's like that's a great concept.
Yeah, see, in the heyday of music, all the bands, the Beatles have played in Ipswich in their time. I would imagine in the mid-60s, probably early 60s.
Yeah, wow. Well, you can be excused for not being there since you weren't born yet. That's probably a good excuse. All right, let's play one more track from Hater. I'm going to go back to number three, Bad Luck.
Even more.
That's Hater, and the new album is Sincere. And if you like those tracks, you should check out the whole album and the rest of the Hater discography.
Yeah, and if you really like that, come with me on May the 25th to the Shacklewell Arms in London to see them.
What do you know about that venue?
I haven't been there in a long time. I've seen A Place to Bury Strangers there, Proper Ornaments. Oh, damn, I'm sure there's more. It used to be legendary for the late finish. When A Place to Bury Strangers played, I think they came on at, I don't know, something ridiculous, 11:30 or 12,
mm-hmm.
which is fine if you live on the street. Well, not really fine. Even if you live next door, that would be annoying. But yeah. If you live in a town 70 miles away and your last train is 11:30, you don't really want the band coming on at 11:30.
Yeah.
We saw the Proper Ornaments as a support, I'm pretty sure. And we almost missed the last train. But I think it's calmed down since those days. That was just totally ridiculous. You've got to have a little bit of consideration for people.
It seems like in general, the time for gigs has gotten better, and it's more accurate than it used to be. I remember, I guess it was kind of a long time ago, but I remember when, the stated start time was nowhere near what the actual start time was. And now they'll say doors at 7, show at 8, and the opener usually starts pretty much right at 8 o'clock. That's how the Fontaines show that we went to was. And I was kind of proud of myself because I was telling my wife, like, this is when the first band's going to come on. That probably means Fontaines will come on at 9, and then it'll probably be over by about 10:30. So I was a little bit off. I think they came on at 9:15, so mm-hmm. pretty close. It's nice to have that predictability, right? There's just this game of making people wait. The very worst example in recent memory that I have of that is when we went down to Chicago to see Echo and the Bunnymen about 5 years ago, probably 7 years ago by now. Time flies, you know. Anyway, great show, but there was no opener. There was no opener listed, and we thought, well, maybe there is an opener, and they just didn't list who it was, you know. And I think it said 8 o'clock, and it started at, 9:20. So we were just standing there for all that time in just a standing venue, you know, and you're just like, come on, just do something. So, anyway, hopefully you'll be able to see Hater, their full set, before the last train leaves.
Yeah, when we saw Florist, for example, theatres are much better. Because if it's a thing which normally has orchestras, or if it's actually a genuine theatre where they have plays, then they're used to saying doors this time, starts this time. And on the European continent, actually, they're much better at this.
Mm-hmm.
Not, if you go to a place like the Shacklewell Arms or the Smokehouse, pre-internet, definitely, and even now, they wouldn't. Like a small indie dive bar would not tell you in advance the time it starts. They tell you the doors, and then you just expect it to turn up. So one reason I like the more prestigious seated venues is because they have the protocols of telling the people when things are actually going to take place.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing about this venue, the Shacklewell Arms, it's an absurd place. The drummer is kind of in a different room to the rest of the band. it's so small, and how can I describe it? I guess it's wood, but not nice wood, like the Florist venue where we went to, King's Place we went to. It's like just this wooden kind of screen with a half circle cut out of it, and the drummer is behind that that semicircle in a different part of the stage, and then the rest of the band is the other side of this piece of wood. Just crazy.
Fun though. Small venues are great, you know.
Yeah,
it's worth the inconvenience of having to fit the band in. Like I was talking about Las Perlas in Austin, where it's not oddly shaped, but it's just tiny. So if you have more than four people, it's trouble. It's like the old Frequency in Madison. It's like I remember I saw so many bands there, and I played there a couple times, and you don't realize it as much when you're watching a band. I think bands just figure out like where to stand or whatever. But then when you're actually on that stage, it's like the headstock of my bass was gonna like hit the drummer's cymbals, you know. You just like, you can't like, it's hard to fit on there. So that's all part of the fun.
Yeah,
All right. Okay, that's three. Three solid bands. And after we've played three solid bands, it used to be this would be the end of the podcast, right? That's how it used to be.
Yeah.
It's not anymore, though.
It's the bonus song of the week. It's the bonus song of the week.
Well, I hope you've done proper music journalism and have a song of the week ready to queue up.
Yeah, kind of.
That wouldn't have to be music journalism. It's just preparation.
Yeah, it's refreshing because refreshing my memory because I always tried to pick. That's right. I was reminding myself where this band comes from, but I'm ready.
All right, you can go first.
Oh, all right. Here we go. The reason this is fun, the song of the week, is because down the years, Will, I've texted you or we've chatted. I said, "Oh, this classic album from such and such a year." And the thing is, there's so many new releases. Seriously, don't expect you. It's impossible to expect someone to go back and listen to all this stuff that came out 20 years ago, 15 years ago, because there's too much new stuff and too much stuff that you already know for you to listen to every other thing someone mentioned. So it's fun just to be able to say, here's something great from a few years ago, which you don't know. Maybe you do know it. and just gives people a sampling. So we're going to Finland. I'm going to embarrass now because you're going to know this and you're going to say, well, we talked about that on the podcast. No, it was pre-podcast. This is the band Cats on Fire from 2007. And the album is The Province Complains.
Okay, you win this one because I am not familiar with this.
This is one of those things where this is good jangle pop. The singer wanted to be, I mean, Morrissey these days is a bit of a difficult figure. But let's just say, let's forget the nonsense of recent times and remember him from his 80s stuff. The singer of Cats on Fire was a bit of a Morrissey wannabe. Hopefully that's demonstrated in the song. It's just a power pop, jangle pop album. Great. I'm going to go with track one, I Am the White-Mantled King.
Yeah, I think you described that accurately. Got a Morrissey vibe. Very catchy. I was looking up the discography. They have at least four albums. Cats on Fire.
There we go. Yeah, it's so fun to be able to sit and listen to that. Back at the time, where are we? 15 years ago. Dear, oh dear. Yeah, I did manage to see them once. That was fun.
Great. Mine's going to kind of tie in here pretty well. There's going to be some continuity. So I was devising I was in line at a coffee shop thinking, what's my bonus song of the week going to be? And I came up with something in my head. This would be a fun track to play. And it was kind of a piano ballad. And I was going to give an example of like a really good piano ballad. But then just as I was thinking that would be my pick, I read that it is the 15th anniversary of the Wilco Sky Blue Sky album. And I thought, you know, it might be fun to go back to that album. And then as I was listening to it, I realized it ends with a piano ballad, and it's a really good one. So, you know, we have this concept. It's a classic concept, right? That the piano ballad can be a complete just disaster, right? Just doesn't fit in with the album and just bad editorial choice. But sometimes you hit one, and it's a good one. So, you know... So Sky Blue Sky came out 15 years ago, so we're in the same year, our picks here, 2007. And going back on listening to this album now, you know, it's turned out, I think, that over the years that the song Impossible Germany is just like the hit from that album, right? It's like maybe because the band highlights it all the time and, you know, Nels Klein goes crazy on the solo and... almost makes you forget a lot of the rest of the album. So I didn't have a chance to go back and listen to the whole thing today, but I did sample through it and remembered that I really liked the closing track. So let's play that one. It's called On and On and On.
Stay together, yeah. On and on and on, we'll be together, yeah. You and I will try to stay together, yeah. On and on and on, we'll be together, yeah. Don't cry, we'll desire to die. Don't deny what's inside. On and on, we'll stay together, yeah. Short or long, our lives are going to be. I will live in you, or you will live in me. Until we disappear together in a dream. Please don't cry.
There you go. Closing piano ballad. That is my bonus song of the week.
Yeah, good one. Good piano ballad. Yeah, good choice.
It can be done. If you're going to take that route, it's possible to do it well.
Do we have any advice for those who are trying? Oh, I don't know. No, we don't have advice.
The young bands, and what should they do with their closing track?
Well, if you're going to do a closing piano ballad, it can be done successfully. Just... make sure it's not too out of keeping with the tone of the rest of the record. If it's, you know, if you're a garage rock band and all your songs are 2 minutes and really fast, don't come in there with a slow piano ballad like that Wilco song.
Especially if there's no piano on the rest of the album. I think that's a telltale sign.
Right? Okay, that's better than my one, yeah. You must have piano elsewhere on the record.
Right. I think that's one rule. Here's another thing. Why don't more people do... kind of a rockin' noise track at the end of the album? Just like, I mean, bands do that live sometimes where they'll just completely rock out at the end, but it's not that common on albums that the last track would be just faster and louder than the rest of the album. So yeah. Another tip to the young indie rockers.
Interesting why it should go slow and contemplative at the end. I guess because you don't start with that because you want to grab people's attention, but yeah, interesting. Weird.
Yeah. Okay. I haven't made my usual statement that we're at greater than $0 yet, so now I have. So, yeah. If you don't think this was worth your time, then I'm very sorry. But if you're still listening, it must have been worth at least, you know, the curiosity. Something good has to be coming. That's what they're thinking, right? After all this time, they got to come up with something decent. So hopefully we did.
Yeah, I felt like I got warmed up in the end. Now we're finishing. Well, that's how live shows go sometimes, too.
All right. Well, great. Thanks, Craig. So maybe you've expressed some interest on in being on again soon. We've got some real cool indie rock stuff coming up. So yet to be scheduled. So we'll see what happens.
Some of our favorite bands have albums that are out that we haven't talked about yet and are coming very soon. I'm going to say no more. We don't like to reveal, but tune in next time.
Right.
All the time after that.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Craig. And we'll talk to everybody again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you each week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, with correspondence from the United States, Canada, England, and Australia. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. All of our episodes can be found at willsband.net. To contact us, send email to willsband@yahoo.com or find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.